Good morning. It's certainly a privilege and an honor to stand in front of you this morning. It is also a great honor that I have to close out our study on the book of John. We've been doing this now for several months, and we're to the last of our assigned topics as we finish out John chapter 21. That's a good study to end with, I believe. And it's just simply entitled, Jesus Speaks with Peter. So we're going to read verses, or John chapter 21. We're going to study verses 15 through 17. So if you have your Bible, here's the text for John 21 and 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And so we're going to look at this final discourse here between Jesus and Peter. It's very well known, but maybe we have a little bit more understanding after we study it this morning. Before we go further, though, let's go to God at this time in a word. Well, if we review a little bit from our last week's sermon that we heard, it's probably a month, 5-6 weeks, somewhere in that ballpark, after the crucifixion, after the resurrection. And so now, Peter and a couple of the other apostles have kind of made their way back home. And so remember last week, I had the lesson about them going fishing again. And Peter makes the statement, well, I'm going fishing. And so there may be a little bit deeper meaning to that. I'm not sure. I don't know if Peter was kind of saying, you know what, I think I'm going back to my old life. I think I'm going back to my old job. I don't know about this Christianity stuff anymore. I think maybe I just need to go back and do my own thing. And then several of the apostles, they go fishing with him. And so there's almost this thought of they've been waiting for Jesus. It's been a couple weeks and nothing's really happened. And now their faith is starting to wane a little bit. And then all of a sudden, here comes Jesus, appears unto them and tells them to cast their net on the other side of the boat. And I don't know if this has any significance or not. I don't know. But it happened. Mentioned there's exactly 153 fish caught in that net. I don't know if that's significant about that number. Typically you round, but for whatever reason, they said there's exactly 153 fish. And so then now they come back onto the shore. Peter puts a cloak on. Apparently he wasn't clothed properly. Jumps in the lake and swims back. And the boat goes back and they meet up. And there's Jesus sitting there on the shore cooking some fish. And that's where we pick up our lesson this morning. So John 21 and 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? So we're going to talk a little bit about this verse and then a little bit of depth here. First thing I noticed was it's early in the morning. They've been working the fish all night and they're having breakfast. And they're eating fish. And I don't know, that just struck me as something strange. Who in the world eats fish for breakfast? And I got to thinking, well, I guess if you were in land that followed the law of Moses, you couldn't have bacon. You couldn't have sausage. You couldn't have ham, all the things that we associate with breakfast. So yeah, they were having fish and bread for breakfast. And so I got thinking about this, and I pulled up this picture. I found this is an actual recipe. It's a fish and avocado bagel. And I thought, that's the most disgusting thing I could imagine eating in the morning. Aaron likes to make this little toast with egg and avocado. That's kind of her breakfast meal. But could you imagine having a fish and avocado bagel for breakfast? I can't even imagine. But I suppose it was something like that. I was just in that culture that they did. They were cooking up the fish, and Jesus has that fish cooking there on the coals, and then they've got some bread, and they put it together, and they have breakfast. And then Jesus then says to Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than this? Is there anything special about that name? You know, is there anything special in the name? Does anything pop out to you? I work with a guy. He has a nickname for just about everybody. Some are pretty funny. That's just the way he remembers the kids' names. He has a nickname for everybody. Are names important? Do they mean anything? And I think in this case it does. Because Jesus says, Simon, son of Jonah. Now, we're going to read elsewhere. You'll sometimes see the kind of collapsed into one word, and it'll say B-A-R, Simon Bar-Jonah. If you ever see B-A-R, in the old language, that meant son of. And so we've got Simon, son of Jonah. Or sometimes he's called Simon Bar-Jonah. That's all the same thing. It's just the way that it's translated. But remember, Jesus kind of had a nickname for old Peter. In fact, I just said it. Peter. But you notice he didn't call him Peter in this episode here. Go back to Matthew chapter 16. Remember when the disciples were all discussing, who do men say that I am? That was the question that Jesus asked. And they came up with all sorts of different responses for who men said that Jesus was. And Peter was the one who really stepped out. Or I guess I should say, Simon Bar-Jona was the one who really stepped out on a limb and said, you're the Christ. And in Matthew chapter 16 and 17, Jesus answered and said to him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jona, or Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. And so I kind of put this word right here in italics here. He calls him Petros. That means rock. And so it's kind of a play on words. It's a nickname. Because of Peter's great faith, or because of Simon Bar-Jonah's great faith and his great confession, Jesus said, I'm going to call you Peter. I'm going to call you the rock. You know, but here we go now. I don't know if Peter was the rock at this point in time. Peter had wavered a little bit. His faith had kind of taken a back. Remember, it was just about a month before Peter had denied Jesus. He had denied and cursed the name of Jesus and acted like he didn't know who he was and started cursing and calling down anything he could say to make sure people realize that he was not associated with Jesus. You think he got over that in a month? I don't know. That'd be pretty tough to deny Jesus. And remember how that story ends, that the last time that Peter denied Jesus, in fact, I don't think it was just three times. It may have been three episodes, but he denied Jesus more than three times. But you remember on the last one, he was sitting there in that courtyard, the trial of Jesus was going on, and it said on that last one when he denied him, that rooster crowed, that Jesus walked by and Jesus made eye contact with him. And it didn't say the same thing, but he just made eye contact with him. You think Jesus, how do you think that made him feel? How do you think the eye contact that Jesus made old, I don't know if I want to call him Peter now, how do you think it made Simon Bar-Jonah feel? You think he got over that in a month? 5 weeks? 6 weeks? Could you get over that quickly? I don't think I could. So I think old Peter, he's kind of struggling a little bit here. And so now, he was ready to go fishing. And I'm telling you, I think I have a feeling that meant he was ready to go back to work. I think that's what that meant. And so Peter is really iffy on this whole following Jesus thing. And Jesus is going to have to straighten him out. So I think there is something special to that. And I think there's a reason why in John 21, he didn't call him Peter. He calls him Simon, son of Jonah. He goes back to his original name. He doesn't call him by his nickname, the Rock. I think there's something to that. Then he says, do you love me more than these? What's Jesus mean by these? What's he referencing? Well, I mean, I don't know the proper English terminology there. But that word these, what is that in reference to? And I've got two interesting thoughts. And I'll give them both to you. Kind of let you make up your own mind. Number one, was he talking about these? Was he looking around at the boats and the nets and the fish and the crew? Was he looking around at all that Peter had? Remember, Peter, I think, was ready to go back to fishing. Is Jesus saying, do you love me more than this? Do you love me more than these? All of this that you see, this old life, do you love me more than what you used to do, the life that you used to live? Probably not how you thought of it in the past, but I suppose that's a pretty good question. In fact, we have another example of a man in the Bible that kind of falls into that same category, that same pitfall right there. His name was Demas. And remember the Apostle Paul, Demas began to travel with the Apostle Paul. And then it's not too much later, he writes to Timothy. I believe it's in 2 Timothy chapter 10, or 2 Timothy chapter 4 rather. He says to him, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. See, Demas loved his old life more than he loved following Jesus. He loved his old life. And so some people think when Jesus says, you love me more than these, I think when he's talking about the ships and the fish, and that you love this old life, you love this better than you love me. And that's the way some people take that phrase there. I tend to fall for this one. Remember, it's all the disciples who are there. We've got, or not all, 11 of them remaining, but there are several of the disciples and followers of Jesus there, and they're all involved in this conversation. Now, they're kind of ancillary to it. They're on the periphery. The conversation is between Jesus and Simon Peter, but they're hearing it and they're there. And Jesus says, do you love me more than these other people? Do you love me more than these other disciples do? And so that's how most people usually take this. Because Peter had a tendency to try to compare himself to the other disciples. And so I think Jesus is returning the favor to him here. For example, in Matthew 26 and 33, Peter answered and said to him, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. So he kind of compared himself to all these other disciples. All these other disciples, they may forsake. All these other guys, Matthew and the other Simon and Judas, they're all going to forsake. They may forsake you, but Lord, I never will. Because I'm above those other disciples. I'll never do that. Well, as we know, Peter did forsake. Peter did deny. It took him a while to come back to him. So Peter on occasion liked to compare himself to the others. And so I'm thinking Jesus is probably returning the favor a little bit. Because Peter was going to be integral and very important into the ministry of the early church. Peter was the one that was, he was going to preach the first sermon there at the Feast of Pentecost. Peter was going to be the one that took it after Cornelius when the Gentiles came into the church. Peter had a very specific role and vision for him. And so Jesus had to know, do you love me more than the rest of these fellows? So take that one of those two ways, whatever you think, but I kind of think it's probably that second. Finally, he says, do you love me more than these? So what does that mean when Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? If you have your Bible with you, you may want to kind of make some notes here. Okay? When you get to John 21 and 15, and it says, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Out beside that word love, I put a little A in my Bible. A little bitty A. Because the word that Jesus used there is the word agape. So there's different meanings and different definitions and words from the Greek that translate love all the same to us. And so one is agape. And it's a different type of love of what's the Greek word called eros. It's different from the word phileo. There's all sorts of different words. So I put a little A beside this one because Jesus says, do you agape love me more than these? Agape love is a very, very deep level of commitment. It is not like a love between a husband and a wife. That's part of it. It's not just a love between people that you know. Agape is a deep and total commitment. So when Jesus asked the question, Peter, do you love me? A little A right there. Because he's saying, do you agape love me more than the others? Do you have the same level of commitment? And so now, Peter is going to reply to him. Second part of 21 and 15. And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Now, I left a little footnote up here. This is what my Bible program does. It has a little footnote here on that word love, and it says, have affection for. So if you got your Bible, put a little P beside that love, because that is phileo love. Jesus said, do you agape love me? And Peter said, yes, I phileo love you. He didn't really answer the question. So I don't know if you've ever picked up on that or not. It's different usages of the word love. Now, I have a pet peeve in my class. I have a couple of But one of my pet peeves that I have in my class is when kids try to answer a statement. That irritates me. I don't know if you ever thought about that or not. I'll say, you did not bring your homework. That doesn't require an answer. And so then the kids will start telling me, well, this happened. I didn't ask you a question. I made a statement. You did not bring your homework. I don't need a response to it. You don't answer statements. You answer questions. If I say, why didn't you bring your homework? That's a question, and I want the kids to respond to it. But when I make a statement, I don't need a response. You don't answer questions. The other pet peeve that I have in class is when kids answer the wrong question. And I will say to a kid, did you throw a paper airplane across the room? And they'll say, little Johnny did it first. That's not the question that I asked. I didn't ask who threw the paper first. I said, did you throw the airplane? It's either a yes or no answer. So when kids start answering the wrong question, it's kind of a pet peeve. That's the discussion we have in my class from the very, very beginning. So here we go. Peter didn't answer the right question. I would have probably gotten a little irritated with Peter if it was me, to be honest. Jesus said, do you agape love me? Do you have a commitment for me? And Peter said, yes, Lord, I had a strong friendship. That's basically what he said. He said, I really cherish our friendship. He did not answer the right question. But Jesus kind of let it go. And so Jesus responds to him, feed my lambs. The Greek word Peter used was phileo. Remember that. Put a little P beside that. So this is a strong emotional bond. It's a strong love between friends, but it's not agape. It does not represent the same level of commitment as agape love. So let's talk about those two words just a little bit. What's the difference of phileo and agape love? Phileo is what you might call soul love. It's a deep love. It's strong, but its value will depend on the elevation of the soul of the bearer. I copied that from the internet. It's kind of hard to understand, isn't it? It's friendship. It's a deep love, but it's conditional. So phileo love, if you're a strong friendship with someone, you will have a strong affection towards them. But what if you're not friends with a person? Then you don't have phileo love towards that person. It's conditional. It's what's going on in your life. It's how you're responding one another. It goes up, it goes down. Phileo love is conditional. Agape love is more of a parental. It's a more mature love. It's a sacrificial love. And it's unconditional. Agape love is much, much deeper. It is unconditional. It's like the parent who watches their child go off and do terrible things. You still love them unconditionally. Regardless of the mistakes that they make, you love them unconditionally. Whereas if a friend did the same thing, that level of commitment would probably drop and you would not have the same feelings towards that friend. So phileo is conditional. Agape is unconditional. Peter answered the wrong question. He did not answer the question that Jesus asked. So Jesus is going to ask it again. In John 21 and 16, he said to him a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend my sheep. So a couple things are the same. You notice he said Simon again. He's still calling him Simon. He's not calling him by his nickname, Peter the Rock. The love in here is the same way. The first love, when Jesus asked the question, is agape. And then Peter responds with phileo. So again, he's not answering the question that Jesus is asking. Do you agape love me? Do you have a great commitment for me? And Peter is saying, yes, Lord, you know that I have a great strong friendship with you. So Peter is not quite answering the question. I'm trying to think to myself, why? Is Peter, is he still not quite as committed as what he needs to be? Does he have that strong love for Jesus, but not quite that commitment to follow him forever? I don't know. I don't know why Peter responds like that. Now, I know Peter says later on, he goes, you know, when I am converted. That phrase has always stuck in my mind. Peter makes that statement. Well, when I am converted. So maybe Peter just wasn't 100% on board. I don't know. But he's definitely not answering the question that Jesus is asking of him. Do you agape love me? You know it, Lord. I have a strong friendship. I phileo love you. A couple questions here for you. Number one. Is there a reason Jesus used lambs in verse 15 and sheep? Verse 15 was lambs and sheep in verse 16. Is there a difference between feed my lambs and tend my sheep? Is there a difference between a sheep and a lamb? Second question I want you to think about, Is there a reason Jesus used feed in verse 15 and tend in verse 16? He said, feed my lambs, tend my sheep. Is there a difference? Is there a difference between sheep and lambs? Is there a difference between feed and tend? Think about that a little bit. We'll try to come up with an answer as we close our lesson. So finally now we have John 21 and 17. And he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he had said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Notice I left my footnote up here. Third time Jesus asked the question. Jesus says, Peter, do you phileo love me? Jesus changed the question. He didn't ask him a third time, do you agape love me? Do you have the great commitment love for me? The third time he said, do you have great affection for me? And this time now Peter answered the right question. And he said, of course, you know all things, Lord. You know that I love you. And so Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Jesus changed the question. Make Peter think about it a lot, though. Make Peter think, do you have that total commitment yet? Maybe Peter didn't have that yet. But you know what Peter did have? He had a great affection and love and a deep friendship with the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And he was going to come around. It just took him a little while longer. You're probably going to pick up on that word I highlighted there, third. Are you curious? Is there any significance to the fact that Jesus asked for Peter's affirmation three times? I'm going to call this poetic license. I don't know. I think we need to be careful of that sometimes where we try to force meaning upon things just because it sounds good or it looks good or it sounds right, or it's what we would do if we were writing a movie script. We would have the three affirmations of Peter offsetting the three denials of Jesus. John 13, 38, Jesus answered him, will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you, Peter, have denied me three times. And so if Peter denied him three times, is it a coincidence that the Lord had him affirm three times? It sounds really good. I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't know if that was intended. But poetic license says, you know what, by that third time, I bet Peter was going, oh yeah, I remember those three that he talked about. He talked about I was going to have three chances to deny him, and I denied him. You know, I denied him all three. And this is the third time he's asked for. I'm sure that bothered Peter. In fact, if you notice in the verse, it says, on the third time, it grieved him. It bothered him. It bothered his conscience. It upset him that Jesus kept asking these questions. Do you love me? Three times. It didn't say it bothered him the first time. It didn't say it bothered him the second time. But that third time, it grieved Peter. I would guess Peter's thinking in the back of his mind, okay, I denied him three times. Now I've confirmed him three times. I think we do need to be careful in that, though, where we try to assign what we feel like makes sense and call it biblical truth. Because I don't know if the Bible ever says anywhere that the three denials go with the three affirmations. But I'll leave that as it is. There we go. Did you notice there was three different combinations that Jesus responded with? First he said, feed my lambs. On the second time he said, tend my sheep. And the third time he said, feed my sheep. Is there a difference between lambs and sheep? Is there a difference between teaching and tending, or feeding and tending? Is there a difference? Are these just basically all the same? Or is Jesus trying to specifically get Peter to do different things? And I'm going to give you my two cents for it. Again, I don't know that I can find any scriptural clarification on this. But I'm going to tell you what I think. I'm going to tell you right now that in the old world, a lamb and a sheep were basically the same animal. They were only separated by age. A lamb was a young sheep. So if you think about the Passover lamb, it had to be 1 year old. And so a lamb was a young sheep. It had not made it yet. It was pure. It was without blemish. Lambs were young sheep. When you feed a lamb, or you feed a sheep, you provide substance to it. On a scriptural standpoint, that's teaching. That's teaching. But when he says, tend my sheep, that takes on a whole bigger aspect. It is not just providing food. Tending means you take care of them like the shepherd. You lead them. You guide them. You help them. You protect them from danger. You lead them to the right spots. You lead them to where they need to be while protecting them from where they don't need to be. Tending is a much larger concept than feeding. We feed our cats every day. We do not tend our cats because there's times you don't see them. It's not the same with sheep. When you lead them, you have to lead them. It's not just feed them and then come back in the morning. That's not how it works with sheep. Don Pruitt was here. He talked some about this. He had a book, and he let me borrow this book. I've been reading it a little bit, and it talks about this. And it talks about a man who's over in the Middle East, and he's giving a bus tour. And he sees a shepherd over there. And this whole time, he has been talking about how shepherds lead. They don't drive. You know, cowboys drive cattle. Sheep, you don't do that. You lead the sheep. And you get out in front and you lead them. And if they're not moving, you pick up a baby. You pick up one of these lambs. And you take off walking. And then the mama sheep will follow her baby. And then all the other sheep will follow too. So it's given all sorts of examples. And he said, and he's given this very beautiful and artistic picture and imagery of what it means, how you shepherd sheep. And it says they're driving down the road, they look up, they see a flock of sheep, and they see a man out there hollering and screaming and chasing them around with a whip. And he's just going after them and screaming and kicking them and everything he can. And all the people are like, I thought you said shepherds had to lead them. And so the man, he said he got off the bus, he went and talked to him. He says, you just ruined everything I just told these people about how to be a shepherd. And the guy goes, well, there's a little bit of misconception here. He goes, I'm not a shepherd, I'm the butcher. And that's what the butchers do. Shepherds lead, butchers chase them down, and they try to kill them. It's a different mindset. Cowboys, they drive a herd. Sheep, you don't do that. You have to tend them. You have to take care of them. You have to show compassion. You have to lead them in the right way. Feeding and tending are different things. Here's my two cents. I'm going to reword these three. I think this is what Jesus was telling Peter. He said, you've got to feed my lambs. In other words, you've got to teach the young. You've got to teach the young in the faith. You've got to be able to teach them. When he says, tend my sheep, he's telling Peter, you know what, you have to lead and guide all the Christians. You have to be able to work with the young in the faith. You have to be able to work with the mature in the faith. And that's not just on Sunday morning. That is something that is all the time. You have to lead and encourage all Christians. And then he comes back and says, feed my sheep. We have to teach everyone. We don't get to a point where we can offer some classes and teach young kids and say, okay, well, we're done. Our teaching is done. No, we need to learn for the rest of our lives. And the shepherd has to be willing to feed and to teach, to continue to teach across the board. Not just teach the young, or not just teach the young. Shepherds are responsible for teaching everyone and for tending and leading the flock. This kind of thing scares me. It scares me about the church. Have leaders of the church, and I include myself in this as a teacher of the congregation, have we followed what Jesus told Peter to do? Do we feed the lambs? Do we teach the young? And I don't mean young by age necessarily. Do we do a good job of teaching new converts or those that have questions that are new to the faith? Have we done a good job of feeding the lambs? Have we done a good job of tending the sheep? Have elders and deacons, and in absence of that, the congregational teachers, have the leaders of the churches, and I'm not just talking about our congregation in general, but just across the board, have leaders in the church done a good job of tending the flock, of leading, of making sure that they're safe, that we're striving away from danger, striving towards what is right? Have we done, as leaders, a good job of tending the sheep, of tending the flock? And thirdly, have leaders and teachers done a good job of continuing to teach the sheep, to feed the sheep? I'm very proud of our teaching here. I think we do a good job of teaching. And I think that's a point of emphasis. that we're always trying to teach. And we don't always want a bunch of lower level sermons. We don't want a bunch of higher level sermons either sometimes, because we have a responsibility. We have to feed the lambs, but we also have to feed the sheep. And that's tough as a teacher, to be able to have a lesson that the young in faith can get something out of, and the mature in faith that have been Christians a whole lot can still get something out of that lesson. And that's a challenge. But I think that's what Jesus was telling Peter to be ready to do. That was going to be his role. That was going to be his responsibility in the early church. I'm going to leave you here with one more passage. And I'm going to ask you, do you think Peter ever figured it out? Do you think Peter figured this out? Well, I'm going to turn to his own words. 1 Peter chapter 5. And we'll close with this passage. It says, the elders, verse 1, who are among you, I exhort. I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eager, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. Verse 5. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourself to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. And I read that passage of Peter, writing many years later as a shepherd, one who was overseeing the flock. He says, I'm a fellow elder. And he's writing to his elders here. Did you pick up on Peter's example? He says, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, in verse 2. In other words, tend the sheep. He says, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. He's feeding the lambs. He's talking to the younger folks. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. Now he's teaching on. He's feeding the sheep. I got thinking, I think Peter got that figured out. I think Peter figured it out. There's a way to tend the sheep, feed the lambs, and feed the sheep. And in one passage, He hits all three of those points. And that also what Peter was able to do. You think Peter phileo loved Jesus at this time, or did he agape love? I think he agape. I think he got it. I think if the Lord were to come back and ask Peter now, do you agape love me? Peter would say, yes, Lord. I have that deep, mature, almost a parental love for you and for your people. I don't think he's ready to say that earlier on. I don't think he was quite ready. He had a friendship with Jesus, but I don't know that he had that deep love. But after reading his words in this chapter right here, I think Peter got it. I think it finally came to be. So in conclusion, think about old Peter. He made a horrible mistake on the night before the crucifixion. Horrible mistake. Turned his back on Jesus, walked off, cursed him everything he could. But he had opportunity to fix it, and he made it right. So when we have an opportunity to fix something that we've done wrong, let's be like old Peter and take advantage of it. Everybody likes Peter, because Peter is the kind of guy that we all have a tendency to be sometimes. We make mistakes, and sometimes those mistakes are big. Fix it. Fix it when you get the chance. Peter made the most of his second chance. But I want you to know it also cost him his life for Christ. Jesus goes on to say, listen, you used to be able to walk where you want to. He says there's coming a time where they're going to gird you and people are going to carry you. And then he makes a reference to his hands are going to be stretched out. And a lot of people think that's in reference to being crucified. And that is kind of what history says was that Peter was crucified. A lot of people say he was crucified upside down. That's what the legend says, so that he wouldn't be considered even with Christ. So it did cost him his life. He was martyred for the cause. But I want you to also notice Peter's example of being a shepherd lives on, even through his writings today, because we can see an example right there of how to feed the lambs, tend the sheep, and then feed the sheep. And that concludes our study of the book of John. So I think that's a great way to end our study.